Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. This was not a concert. This was a fight for survival. That's a quote from someone who went to the Astro World Music Festival Friday in Houston. 8 people died. Over 300 were injured. The floor of the venue was general admission, and that was a big part of the problem. CNN spoke to someone who was on the floor and almost didn't make it out alive.
We had gotten to the stage that Travis Scott was performing about like 6:30, so like 3 hours before he was supposed to perform because we wanted a good spot. And as time went on, it just kept getting more crowded and more crowded and more crowded. But then he started a countdown about 30 minutes before he performed. He started a timer on the big screen, and all of a sudden, people just compressed up against each other and were pushing forward and backward. And as the timer got closer to coming down to zero, it got worse and worse. And I looked at my boyfriend, Sam, and I told him, I was like, we have to get out of here, because I just felt, you know, I was having constant pressure on my chest, constant pressure on my back. It was like, from the side, I was being squeezed. I tried to lift up my arms to make more room for myself. It wasn't working. So right when he started performing his first song, I looked at my boyfriend. I said, we have to get out of here. He said, I can't. We can't. We couldn't. And then I just remember looking up and passing out. And then I was in and out for a little while. I didn't see anything, but I could kind of feel what was going on. Someone pulled me over a fence, and I was sat in a chair, and then I passed out again. And when I woke up, I was in a different area in a chair with a water bottle in my lap.
Unbelievable.
Frightening.
8 people dead at a concert. And it sounds to me like this Travis Scott likes to have mayhem in the audience. He almost provokes it. Somebody was saying, I don't know if this is true, that he actually went to jail for a while for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like in 2017 or something. Like he provokes the violence in the audience. I don't know if this is true, but it's something I heard.
That's horrendous.
I mean, I've never really even heard of the guy before, to be honest with you.
He's Kylie Jenner's boyfriend or husband or man.
Man of the day.
Yes.
He's next. Yes.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah. I get those goosebumps every time you come around. Yeah. You ease my mind. You make
I know this sounds like such an old guy thing to say. I got to tell you, I hear this. I'm like, this sounds like every other song.
I get those goosebumps every time.
You know what these videos are like?
What's that?
There was a string of videos in the 80s of all like hair metal bands, and they all had the same things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, hot girls and
spandex and poofed out hair. Yes.
And, you know, a lead guitar player like making a face as he's making, you know, and smoke and explosions.
Right,
and
right. All cliche. Pants.
Yes, all cliche.
Cliche, yes.
Yeah, that's what this video looks like. It's one thing after another you expect in a rap video.
What's the song called? Headache?
It looks like he was arrested twice already for this.
Ugh.
Once in 2015 for encouraging the crowd to ignore security and rush the stage. And in 2017, arrested again for encouraging fans to bypass security and storm the stage in Arkansas.
Okay, in that case, next time he needs security, guess
and
what?
Then, in 2020... he had like a specific deal that he did with McDonald's where they put like a specific item on the menu for him. And he showed up at a McDonald's location in a Ferrari. This is in the pandemic, during, like before the vaccine. And then just like lets all the fans just rush up together. So there's just hundreds of people packed together because he showed up in a Ferrari and he's taking a selfie.
I think I heard about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard about that too. Yep.
Book him.
Yeah. I think you arrest a guy like this. Right?
Or give him no security next time he needs it.
Well, I think he's proven he doesn't really care about his fans.
Well, Live Nation will not promote a show of his again.
No.
Right? I mean, you can't.
Too risky.
Eight people dead.
Yep.
Oh, there'll be a lot of lawsuits. There's one already.
Yeah, somebody already filed.
Yeah.
That was quick.
Just bananas, man. I remember they used to have general admission for concerts, and they would open the doors and say, the first one to the seat gets the seat. And then in Philadelphia, the Who were playing.
Yep.
And six people died. They were trampled.
Yep.
And that was the end of general admission. So this could be the end of GA on the floor. I mean, I've been to Toad's place a couple times where it's mobbed, and I go down on the floor. I'm like, can't do it. I can't do this. I'm claustrophobic. It wasn't anything that I felt was dangerous, but it was a little too stuffy for me.
Yeah. Hard to breathe.
Right.
Loud.
And then how am I going to get a beer? Like, exactly. I need a beer. I need a bathroom. I need things. I'm needy.
Right. I'm not wearing a catheter, damn it. I have to urinate.
It's diaper time.
Right.
Diaper time.
I don't think needing the bathroom is needy.
No. Yeah, I'll just go right here. I'll just go right here and make my own room.
Yeah. And then, you know, we've talked to people who have been in Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah.
They get there real early.
I'll never do it. That's never going to be me.
I passed that window of opportunity. Like, in my 20s, I would try it, but now I'm done. I will rent a hotel room.
That was the best way you did it. Yeah. You got to watch my hotel room.
Yeah.
That's 10 times better.
Yeah.
Bathroom, heat, food, drinks.
Bring your binoculars. Oh, that guy's throwing up. Oh, it's only 9 p.m., idiot.
Yeah. Everything you need. But yeah, we've heard stories where you're standing there, it's brutally cold, and then all of a sudden, you feel something warm on your leg.
Oh, no.
Is there a dog here?
Please tell me you spilled your coffee. Perhaps your hot cider?
I think for a second you're like, that actually feels good.
Right.
Oh, my God. You're like, all right, this is gross, but man, just there's one part of my body warm right now.
Like that scene in Dumb and Dumber?
Now I smell like Tinkle. Oh, my God.
What happened in that scene?
They're riding the moped up to Aspen?
Yeah, riding the mini bike.
Just go, man.
Yeah. That feels really warm.
Then they're frozen together. They're an icicle.
Try to get the bite. Yeah.
Chaz and AJ. Hey.
Hello. Hello.
One, two. Thank you.
I got to hear us.
We have a clip of Travis Scott who posted on Instagram Saturday.
I just want to send out prayers to the ones that was lost last night. We're actually working right now to identify the families.
First of all, can I say they weren't lost?
No.
Like, they were killed. Okay. It's a nice word to say, oh, well, they were lost. It's like, no, we know where they are.
Yeah.
Okay. They're just not alive anymore.
Because of you.
Yeah. It wasn't like, hey, there were really bad directions given to the concert.
Yeah.
And now they're driving around Texas somewhere. We don't know where they are.
Aimlessly.
No. Yeah. Go ahead.
Perhaps hungry.
So we can help assist them through this tough time.
Hold on. Tough time is when you lose your job, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
The family.
Devastating loss. Try that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're queuing out for a concert and never
rapper.
Came back.
You write songs.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, spend more time writing this one.
He's also not helping anything. He said, we're helping.
You know, my fans really mean the world to me, and I always just really want to leave them with a positive experience.
I got to tell you, based on his history, I have a little issue with what he's saying right now. My fans are everything to me.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It seems like you do this all the time.
Exactly.
Like they get crushed and stepped on. And
right.
Until it comes to safety, then you don't care so much.
Exactly right, yeah.
I care about them in terms of their money. They're a money stream for
right,
me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And anytime I can make out, you know, anything that's going on, you know, I just stop the show and, you know, help them get the help they need, you know?
That's what people were yelling out, stop the show, and he wouldn't stop the show. So he'd stop for a second, and then he would go back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, that's rough. I'm trying to think of the, like, craziest concert I've been to. Like, where I was like, whoa, this is out of control.
And there were so many people.
Yeah, I've never been to one where they're, like, slam dancing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I see that. People are coming out bloodied.
Yep.
And they love it.
What a great time I had.
I'm like, I like my teeth.
Hold my tooth.
Yeah. So you've never been in, like, the first 30 rows of a Slayer concert?
No.
Yeah. The Foo Fighters got crazy. I was, they were at Citi Field back in like 2016, and they had the whole field was open. There were some seats, but there's some places where you could stand. It's like, we're standing, we're getting as close as possible. And it was fine. I never felt in danger, but like you're talking to someone, a song's on, you're like, yeah, you look over to your left again. It's like, oh, there are 17 people over that way now.
Yeah. It used to be the last couple of songs you could rush the stage, and the barrier was really not the barrier. There was just the stage. So you're right up against the stage.
Right by the monitors and everything, yep.
Yeah. And then I think a couple people got crushed and suffocated. And they're like, oh, we're going to need a... Where they were climbing up on stage.
We should probably put a barrier there.
Yeah, you know, we probably need a barrier.
Or electric fence, one of the two.
Yeah, and then the barriers, and then, you know, geez, I just... It's horrible. Chaz and AJ.
Hey, good morning. Hey. Matt from Stanford. How are you?
Hey, good, thanks.
Hey, you guys remember 1979 Ted Nugent at the Navy Coliseum? The
yes.
Buses over?
Yes.
I was there. I was 15 years old.
Okay, were you in the parking garage?
Yes.
All right, you were probably part of the problem.
No. I was just a kid.
Right.
I was just a kid. It was crazy, though.
I, for the longest time, thought I was partly responsible for that riot. And then as we have heard more stories, I think, oh, no, this is going to happen anyway.
Right.
So I went to that show with a friend of mine, and I did not know where he got the car from, apparently. Borrowed it without telling the person he was borrowing it.
Quote unquote borrowed, yes.
And apparently he didn't even know the person he was borrowing it from.
That's how nice
the
person was.
Where'd you get this car? Anyway, we end up at the show. Everyone's partying. Concert gets out. He starts doing donuts up on the top level. This gets people rowdy. They start throwing empty beer bottles down to the people on the ground.
The folks below.
Folks below. Now.
You know what? They need these.
Right. Raining beer bottles.
We have so many we should share.
That just makes a concert.
It turns out that car doing donuts really didn't.
No.
Like, this was going to happen anyway.
It was just a series of events.
Right. Yeah. You know what happens? One person says, watch this. They throw their bottle down.
Yeah.
It hits someone and it scatters. And it becomes like Grand Theft Auto when you take a position on top of a building and start popping people. You're like, wow, this is actually a lot of fun.
Right.
It was just one ingredient to the pie.
It was one ingredient. And people just start throwing, actually, boxes of empty beers off the side of the ground.
Wow, that's got to hurt down below.
The people down below go nuts, and then they flip a bus over.
Well, the backwash. I've got backwash beer in my hair now.
They flipped a city bus on its side.
And then
the mayor came out and said, Ted Nugent, you can never, ever, ever play New Haven again.
And he said, all right!
But yeah. Where were you during all of that mayhem?
I don't remember. It was a long time ago. I'm chronologically your age, so I was 15 at the time. I remember.
Okay. No, but drunk. I mean, where were you when all hell was breaking loose?
Your position.
I don't remember. It was just so long ago, but I was at the concert with my cousin.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Hey, guys, have a great day.
Hey, thanks, man. You too.
Apparently, he was inside that bus. Still hung onto the strap.
Yeah, luckily there was no one on the wrong side of that bus.
Oh, that could have been no kidding.
Freaking horrible.
That sucked.
Boston John.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Yo.
Hey, so I went to a Lollapalooza where the opening act was Rage Against the Machine.
Oops. Wow.
And I was in the pit with all these people. And before the first song was done, someone already tore the shirt clean off my body.
So selling shirts is a good idea over there.
And they were making human pyramids and jumping off the human pyramids into the crowd.
That's wild. It's wild.
Yep. The things you think of, spur of the moment. I need a shirt. Yours will
do. I don't think there's thinking involved in any of this.
Why do they need the shirt to wipe the blood?
It's such an energy you get. I mean, think about it. Rage Against the Machine. That will press that button inside of that.
Yep.
Inner anger.
Yep.
Click. Right. Let's dial it to 10.
The trigger.
How about 11?
Trigger set. Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right when they began their career. You know, they were just new to the scene, and people went total mayhem nuts. I barely got out. I lost the shoe. I lost my shirt.
Total mayhem nuts. That sounds like a level, a nice condition level. We were set on total mayhem nuts.
They need to make breakaway shirts.
Mike in North Haven.
Talking about the concerts, I was dragged to, back in high school, I was dragged to the Dave Matthews concert. I want to say it was like 99 or 2000.
By a girl?
Where they had the yeah, it was awful.
Yeah.
And they had the big riots there. They were lighting the fence on fire. There was like 60 people got arrested in the parking lot. It was
Where was this, Hartford?
All over it was Hartford. It was at the Meadows back in like, yes. I think it was like early 2000, maybe late 99. I was in high school. It was absolutely insane.
Yeah, the Bernie Ants marching, yes.
It was crazy. It was absolutely insane. I've never seen anything like that. Of course, my parents freaked out when they found out I was there, but, you know, it was... I've been to multiple concerts at the Meadows, and I went to Ozfest, and it was fine. But Dave Matthews apparently invokes violence for some reason. I don't understand it, but
it's College Slapfest night. Yep.
Yeah. Dave Matthews people are usually pretty mellow.
Yeah.
This one was crazy. Let's look it up. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Have a good one, guys.
All right, you too.
This apparently was shortly after Woodstock '99.
Ew.
And Dave Matthews was there. So this article starts with, lately it seems whenever the Dave Matthews Band plays, a riot breaks out. First it was Woodstock, now Hartford's Meadows Music Theater. I don't think that's what it was ever called, but okay.
Well, there's two different crowds. There's a crowd that swears they know what he's saying, and the other crowd has no idea what he's saying.
Yeah.
This was August of 1999.
I remember hearing about that. Now that bing, is that a string breaking? Or
that's, that's a Dave Matthews lyric.
It seems like the most trouble was in the parking lot. There were people who did not have tickets to the show.
There you go.
They were just drinking, smoking pot, and inhaling nitrous oxide.
Oh!
And then they lit a car on fire.
There you go.
Then the police responded and they threw bottles and rocks at them.
Oh. All right. Well, it wasn't Dave Matthews. The bottle went off my head. Bing.
Bing.
So it wasn't the fans, it was the jerks that showed up that didn't have tickets.
Oh, that was just one night. This was a three-show stint, and there was an issue like every night, apparently.
Oh.
The next night, the police showed up with increased, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure that this has something to do with the amount of tailgating you could do there, too.
Yeah.
They pulled that back.
Police responded the next night by firing rubber bullets at the crowd who once again were throwing bottles and rocks at the police officers.
And they kept them as souvenirs. Can you sign this?
I have to imagine getting hit by a rubber bullet is very painful.
That's got to hurt, yeah.
See, when I go to a concert, I don't think, let me wear my best getting hit by a rubber bullet shirt.
Exactly right.
Like, I'm just here to have a good time,
right,
and sing along to the couple songs I know.
That's about it.
That's all.
Castle
have some
Buzz.
Beer.
Right.
This is a great quote by Field Sergeant Dan Albert. It was just a bunch of intoxicated people with no place to go, and they just started to raise hell. It was just general hooliganism and drunkenness.
Hooliganism.
Hooligans.
That is a great quote.
Pipe down, you hooligan.
We're just talking about that Travis Scott show, 8 people dead in Houston Friday after the crowd just went nuts.
Very sad.
Based on the reports, it sounds like Travis Scott brought a little bit of this on.
Uh-huh.
Not a lot of bit of it.
They followed.
Chaz and AJ, hello.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on, man.
Oh, sorry. Hey, that's this is Jeff from West Hartford. Yeah, I was at the Clash of the Titans concert in Lake Compounds in 92, so the headliner was Slayer.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it was just funny because I had to tell the story because Slayer was the ones, the crowd went so crazy they were ripping the chairs out of the bolted ground.
Wait, there were no chairs at Lake Compounds. It was long.
No, not anymore.
it was an outside venue, and they bolted the chairs down because they knew these bands were coming, Megadeth, Anthrax, and Slayer, and Alice in Chains.
Totally Compounds.
What year was this?
This was when I was a teenager, so it was like in 92. This is just before Alice in Chains even were known, and they got booed off stage because they were the opening act.
Wow. Huh. Can you imagine?
They showed them, didn't they?
All right, because I'm thinking of the field where I saw Aerosmith and Don Henley, but there, I think you're right. I think there was another place you could see a show that had seats.
Yeah, no, they never decided to do that again. They figured they made a mistake on that one.
They were so hardcore they actually bolted the seats down, then ripped them out.
Yeah,
that's a hardcore audience.
It's like these seats are too easy to throw.
We're gonna bolt these down and rip them out. Because that's what rock and roll is all about.
But the funniest part of the whole story is the Slayer actually stopped the set, and they actually tried to calm the crowd down and say, but the way they said it was so great. Like the singer just sounded like a really nice dad talking to his kid. He's like, guys, we got to calm down, okay? We got to stop throwing the chairs around. We don't want to see any of you guys get hurt, okay?
Then he went back to singing like this.
Yeah, exactly. That's why.
Kids, I need you to stop this now, okay, please?
That's exactly what happened.
That's wild. All right, thank you for calling, brother. Appreciate it. Cold Case Guy, Alex Baber, is on. He's founder, director, and lead consultant of Cold Case Consultants of America. How do you take cases? Do family members lobby you, police departments?
A-team?
Oh, both do, actually. Most of them are family members. They reach out to us directly. You know, we have a policy where we do not accept funds from family members. You know, as far as police departments and agencies, state, local, or federal, we haven't charged anybody up to the state.
Wow.
Nice.
How do you eat?
Well, we've established the savings up to this point, and we've had some stock shares that we've actually sold in the company to finance the trips and, you know, the evidence. A lot of our forensics we do out of house with, you know, whoever the top tier company is out there, digital forensics, you know, DNA, whatever we need to do just to validate our findings before we release it to the public.
I'm sure you heard about the Jennifer Dulos case. Would that be considered a cold case?
See, there's a fine line here. My definition of a cold case and some law enforcement agency's definition may vary. I believe that once a case has no new active information or evidence over a one-year period of time, it should be considered a cold case. You know, we have some cases like the Delphi murders. We'll be going on 5 years on February 14th of next year, and they still say they're only one piece away from closing the case, and they do not consider it cold. Well, I mean, how long do you ride that train? You know, we're going to say that in another 5 years, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, we're just one piece away. You know, a couple cases, it depends on what angle you look at it.
The Jennifer Dulos case, I feel like, you know, look, I get yelled at by lawyers all the time. but I feel like we know who did it, where it, the first part of the crime happened. And then what we don't know is where she is. Is that considered a cold case, or is that kind of like, well, we know who did it, we just don't know where the body is? Is that a cold case?
Well, it's still considered a cold case. I mean, until you have a perpetrator that's been identified, you know, suspect that's in handcuffs and either prosecuted and locked up or at least identified and they're trying to track him down.
Well, he was in handcuffs, he was arrested, and then he made bail, and then he committed suicide.
Right. Well, there's good attorneys out there. You know, they get paid an extreme amount of money to get people off the hook. Now, I mean, if you look at the evidence, I've reviewed it. I have not had the case files in my possession, only what's in the public domain. You know, they consider, I guess, the case is still active. And they're going to until they have somebody that's in handcuffs and locked up, or they, again, identify somebody with a form of forensic evidence.
Well, the husband was arrested, and they have a pretty strong... Based on what I saw on Dr. Phil, they have a pretty strong case of timeline of him traveling down this road, then that road, and then phone calls and car wash immediately after. And it was pretty compelling. So in my mind, and, you know, what do I know? I think we know who did it. But this is my opinion, strictly.
Well,
right?
Not forget the 30 bags that they were dispersing across the city in Hartford,
dumping
in the trash cans. So there's a lot of circumstantial evidence there that points to the husband.
And, right, it's just, where is she? That's the big question. Where is she? Now, is that something that you would take on, or not really?
I mean, if we were reached out by the family members or by the local law enforcement agency, I would definitely take a look at it. I'm here to help anybody. I believe everybody deserves answers. Yeah. You know, there's a call to action here. If people sit around all day and they let this fade into time, these cases will eventually be forgotten. They're only remembered by the initial officers that worked the case or the family members. And as you know, nobody lives forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've worked many cases that are 50, 60 years old.
Wow.
We've gotten somewhere on them.
Nice.
With today's technology. But they were forgotten until we, you know, picked up the ball and started running with it again. You know, but everybody deserves answers.
Absolutely.
You know, there's victims out here that their lives were ended in a horrific manner, horrific way, obviously. And, you know, their family have to come to light with answers one way or another. There's no way around it.
Well, it's horrible to think that the person who did something horrible to a loved one is still out there just having a good time.
Roaming free, yep.
Yeah.
Most cold cases are that way. If you think about it, AJ and Jess, until you have a perpetrator identified, you have to consider that the individual that's out there that committed the homicide is still roaming the streets. Mm. We do not know if he's passed on, if he's deceased. You know, most murderers, especially those that are spree killers or, you know, serial killers, they continue to murder. They don't stop until they're made to. Someone either stops them or they move on.
So where do you start? Let's just say someone lobbies you to take on a cold case and you say yes. And what do? You go to the police department? Do they give you access to the case files?
Well, the case is considered close. There's some cold cases that law enforcement may consider closed, but to us, we consider them still active or open. You know, their findings do not necessarily, you know, run parallel with what we uncover or what we think happened. So we dig into it, and if we find any hard evidence or what they refer to as real evidence in the court of law, then we move forward on it. But, you know, it's hard to get a agency to open up their files, even to us, 9 out of 10 times. You know, they like to keep it close to their chest, to their vest. There's something called guilty evidence, which, you know, usually only the perpetrator knows, and they do not like to get that out into the public domain. Some people get on the internet and they go on these forums, they type all this information in. You know, most of it's a false narrative they create, which spreads like wildfire. And once that's out there, it's really hard to retract.
I love shows like Forensic Files because in 30 minutes you have the crime, the work that had to be done to find out who did it.
Reenactments.
Who did it. And then at the end of it, it's a happy ending because they got the guy or the girl who did it and they went to court and they're going to prison or whatever. But these investigations are so freaking tedious.
Decades.
Yep.
Some people, to be straightforward with you, since 1980 alone, there's over 250,000 cold cases that are filed and unsolved. Let that sink in for a minute. 250,000 victims with families that do not have answers. And of that 250,000, only 1% will ever be solved, meaning that it results in a conviction.
Wow.
These are FBI statistics.
Yikes.
So,
What's the last one you got involved with that you were able to solve?
Well, we have a couple right now that we've pulled together that have been cold for a while, like the Margaret Ellen Fox case in 74. We have an audio spectrum analysis match to the perpetrator's voice that the FBI released in June of 2019. So this is a rather big one. We have a fingerprint latent match on a couple big ones that everybody knows if I mention the names. Unfortunately, I can't disclose that.
When is this going to come out? Big ones that everybody knows.
We're gonna end up releasing this at the timeline that we're on right now. We're gonna release it by no later than February.
Why wait?
Well, we got to see. I'm one of these people that believes in checking and rechecking,
gotcha.
Especially when it comes to something of this magnitude.
Really?
Cold case.
So yeah, we're all going to know. We're all going to know.
You're going to know.
Oh, wow.
We're all going to know. And it's going to – we're rewriting history is what we've been told by law enforcement.
All so, right. This isn't something just to get our attention. You really have something. We're all going to know. It's going to be like a JonBenet Ramsey case where it's – We
That's
all
what I was thinking too.
Know.
Yeah,
we've all heard the name.
Famous cases. Yeah,
yeah, you guys are gonna be sitting back, going, "Holy crap!" Never.
Wow.
So
it's not Jimmy Hoffa.
No, it's not Jimmy Hoffa.
Not OJ.
Not OJ. No, negative.
JonBenet.
Think bigger.
What?
Think bigger.
Think bigger.
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 Yeah. JFK.
JFK.
So, well, my uncle was involved in that. LBJ is my uncle. He's
wow.
a great uncle.
What?
So, oh, wow.
Yes.
Did your uncle have something to do with it?
Now we're going down a very long and windy road.
That's
here.
A yes.
Uh-oh.
So, no, I didn't say yes. I don't want you putting words in my mouth.
Wait,
it's a long and windy road.
Is it JFK?
Beatles.
You didn't say no to that.
No, this would the particular cases that we're discussing right now would not be John Fitzgerald Kennedy. So,
what do you think about that?
My opinion, I think... Yeah. What I think and what I know are two separate worlds.
Gotcha.
So
what you think
the same
and
way.
You
well,
know.
We'll have a discussion on this one day.
I know
we'll
nothing.
We'll sit down and have a discussion about this one day. But no, it's the cases that we're working on again are cold cases that are involving homicides.
Bigger than OJ, bigger than JonBenet Ramsey.
Bigger.
Yes, I would consider them.
Julius Caesar. No.
Wow.
Yeah, Julius Caesar, right.
Oh, yeah. Can you give us a century?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're looking within the last 54 years.
54.
All right, so Julius is out.
That's too specific.
Wow, that's 54 years.
What's math?
Now you're picking up on the clues.
2021 minus 54.
The how many licks takes to get the center of Tootsie Pop? No,
all
that's
right,
not it. No.
2021 minus 54. So 1967.
Right.
67?
Is something to do with aliens?
Yeah, 67 has nothing to do with aliens. It would be something that was in the newspaper just about every day. So,
newspaper every day.
Robert Kennedy?
The weather. No.
it wouldn't be political. So, yeah,
not political.
You guys are digging. You're getting me in trouble with the PR.
All right. Was it the Joanne Fox case?
Well, Margaret Ellen Fox was 1974, but there is a connection to that case. So I gave you a little bit of evidence or pieces of information there. I probably shouldn't have.
No, the 1967 unsolved murder of Joanne Fox, they just exhumed her body in June of this year.
Joanne Fox. I don't think I'm
all right, so that's
that.
A no.
Yeah, if he has to go Joanne Fox, unless he's throwing you off right now.
He could
Phil,
be.
Did you find any?
I have no idea.
Oh, that's right. He is he's of course.
Yeah. He definitely, yeah.
Hey, look, in 2 months, it may actually come back earlier. As soon as we get the final, answer back, because we send it back out to another forensics lab. As soon as we get it back and we're good to go, we'll give you guys heads up.
Do you nice. See how fast I was just like, okay, it's somebody else.
Right.
He's like, Joanne Fox.
That doesn't sound familiar
at all. Yeah. Yeah. After I tell you, you're going to sit back and go, oh, I should have known that.
Oh,
so,
see? Wow.
It'd be like my mother saying, hey, you just take those cookies. Oh, the cookies.
Take the cookies.
What kind of cookies?
We had cookies?
I didn't see cookies.
Oh, she did not let up after I pulled one of those.
Oh, yeah, huh?
I can't believe I just fell for that.
Great. So, but we're working on, it's a total of 106 homicides between all the cases.
Wow.
And, that's insane. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we got a few of them that are connected. A few of them are independent. But the technology today, the software that we're using, the database that I created, in-house myself for linguistics purposes, it's paying off. It's like a diamond mine that we're harvesting. So it's working out really well.
Oh, man. There was this guy who created this software. I saw it on a Forensic Files episode, but they were putting in the information and it predicted where the person would probably strike next based on where he was going.
Wow.
And it also predicted that it's probably someone in law enforcement.
Oh, wow.
And this program was correct in both.
But six winning lotto numbers? No.
No.
That's correct.
I want to think about this name, if it's bigger than all these names we're throwing out there.
67. What happened in 67?
67?
54 years ago.
I'll just give you a heads up. 67 is not when the crime was necessarily committed. It's when it came to light.
Ah, so damn it.
Yeah, so you're going to have to dig a little bit deeper on this one, guys. But, I mean, I'll tell you this much. Once we release the forensic evidence, we have the audio spectrum analysis, plus we have the latent print match. Once we get this out into the public's eye and everybody's able to put their hands on it, you know, I'm one of those people, you got to touch it, feel it, you know, taste it.
Yeah,
I don't go down the speculation, assumption, opinion road. So that's why we're doing this. We're checking our double checks, make sure everything's accurate before we release it to the public. Because you know, once you put it out there, you can never take it back.
Yep,
and the media is unforgiving.
Oh, and the internet's worse.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Try Facebook sometime.
We dot our I's and cross our T's. We're professionals. You know, I've assembled one of the best teams ever assembled. You know, in the civilian domain, I have, you know, the top forensic scientists and anthropologists. I have the number one forensic document examiner, Curtis Baggett. And, you know, I have retired detective Patrick Apollyon, who's Officer of the Year award winner.
Wow, you got the A-team. Look at that.
You know, the public has labeled us, or the media has labeled us as having, you know, super team or A-team.
You got no BA, though.
Yeah, right. So,
you guys just want to fly. Nice van.
Yeah.
Mr. T.
Yeah.
Kevin Hogan from Channel 3 texted me Jimmy Hoffa. I already asked.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not Jimmy Hoffa. But again, when this comes out, guys, it's going to be huge. You know, the PR's has me on the wraps right now. They don't want me to release it just yet.
Yeah, I get it.
I hear you.
We've already got three validations, verifications back on it. We want to get a fourth, which is overkill. But that way, whenever
that's I'm great, up,
yeah, questions.
That's great.
But yeah, it's great,
only
guys.
More people did it that way.
It's gonna be huge.
I didn't even get to. I didn't even get to the cases we were gonna talk about. So we got to have you back soon.
All right, I appreciate it, guys. It'd be great to. It's my honor being here.
And oh,
I really
please.
Appreciate you allowing us to expose this to the public.
Thank you for what you're doing.
This is awesome.
Yeah, so we're linked up to your stuff on our radio station website, and we will talk to you real soon. Alex Baber, founder, director, and lead consultant of Cold Case Consultants of America. Thank you, brother. You know, this is something I would never do, but I'm fascinated with it.
What's that?
Climbing buildings.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a tremendous fear of heights.
I like the elevator.
So it's it's always a better way to go.
The stairs
or elevator.
Exactly right. You get that feeling of climbing, but not risking your life.
Jason Horkin, general manager of Hudson Yards Experiences, on to talk about City Climb. And is this opening tomorrow?
This is opening tomorrow. Today is the last prep day, and tomorrow we'll be ready to welcome guests.
Nice.
And when you mean, what do you mean when you say guests?
Really, you know, we really want anyone that wants to get a new vantage point of New York City to come down, check it out. You know, as you were saying, climbing buildings is not something that most people think about for a fun experience, but this is extremely thrilling and a great way to really see the city in a very different light and really experience it in a different way.
You're climbing outside the building on ropes, or how is this done?
Yeah, so the first thing we do is we give you a comprehensive safety briefing. So, you know, what we want to do is make sure that everybody's comfortable. If you're nervous, if you're scared, you're not going to enjoy the experience. So we start with a safety briefing. Then we give you specially designed protective gear and equipment. So basically, we put you in a harness. It's a full body harness that secures you in. And then we attach you to the building via really two lanyards onto what we call a trolley, which rolls along with you as you walk. And once you're attached, you're on the building. You're not coming off the building. And at that point, we walk you
no matter
outside.
What.
No matter what.
What if the rope breaks?
So there's multiple ropes that are connecting you. These lanyards are engineered and tested, you know, to the extreme. So there's multiple redundancies if anything was to happen. Once you get outside, then it's really you and the city. And, you know, it's walking literally up the crown of the building to the very peak of the building. At that point,
how many
really
feet?
How are you going here?
It's about 1,300 feet. So you really are the highest point you could be anywhere in the world in an experience like this, exposed to the elements strapped onto a building.
What if a normal person wouldn't be able to do that? Like, they don't have the leg strength to do that, right?
It's actually it's actually not so bad. So it's like walking up a flight of stairs in a lot of ways. And we know that people, number one, it's a new experience for them. They're outside of their element. Plus, we want people to take in the environment. So we actually stop along the way. So think about walking kind of half a flight of stairs, stopping for a few minutes, looking around, walking up a few more, about a half a flight, stopping, looking around, walking up a little more. It's actually not that strenuous.
Is this a weight or pulley system that makes it easier?
No, it's really just you walking up. But,
wow.
It's two things. One, it's adrenaline. It's the excitement of being out there and seeing it in a very new way. And, you know, I haven't seen anybody in all of the tests that we've done yet that has had a problem walking. And it really is just a matter of, you know, if you get tired, let the guides know. They'll stop for a few minutes, let everybody catch their breath, and keep going.
What about things like windy days or rain?
I was going to ask about wind, rain, bees, and birds.
Bees, yeah. Yellow jackets especially.
Yeah.
So, Let's start backwards. Birds and bees. Bees, typically, we don't see any bees up there. You're kind of higher than the bees tend to go.
That's wild. That's good.
Similarly, birds, you know, every once in a while we'll see like a falcon kind of circling around, but you're typically higher than most of the birds are.
Don't dress like a mouse.
Falcon's got to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, don't wear a squirrel hat.
Hey, this is my territory.
Yeah.
My prey is on the side of a building. Right?
Look at that. Lunch came to me.
Wind and rain are really the two things that, you know, we keep our eyes out for. If it gets too windy, we obviously won't let people out there. We want you to enjoy the experience. We don't want you to be kind of fighting against the wind.
Yeah.
Rain, you know, slight drizzle is no problem when we start
talking
about real heavy rain.
No problem.
You know, once you get into, no problem with a little bit of drizzle. But heavy rain,
really?
I mean, you wouldn't want to be out there.
Wouldn't that make the side of the building slick?
No, it's really the walkway is graded, so it's really not a metal kind of grading, so it's not slippery at all.
You're not like Batman and Robin,
right?
Walking up the side of the building,
folks opening windows saying hi.
Okay, are there people inside the building?
What's that?
Are there people inside the building?
There, where the city climb goes, is not where people actually are. So we're above. We're basically above the observation deck, above edge, and going up to the peak of the building. But at the very top, when you do the activities where you lean over the edges, you're looking down on edge, and the guests that are on edge can look up and wave back and forth. So it becomes kind of a community experience as well.
There's a lot of people listening who are like, yeah!
My stomach is dropping as we speak.
I'm not one of those people. So I put on those VR glasses,
yeah,
and I do that thing where you're walking on a beam, looking down.
Oh, hell
no.
And
I know I'm in my living room, and I still get petrified.
You sweat?
I will
can't
soil
do it.
I will
like,
soil
I
myself.
Can't do it.
Yep.
Oh, we should make AJ do it just to see that, though.
Yeah, get him. Yeah, stand below me for a second.
How much does it cost to do this, Jason?
So it's $185, and if you're already coming to Edge,
that's cheap.
And you have tickets already, we can upgrade your tickets as well.
What do you mean, upgrade?
Everybody have an opportunity.
So they're going to give you the strong ticket. Rope?
Yeah, right. We'll give you the good one. Yeah.
We'll put an airbag underneath you.
Right.
If you're here, you didn't know about it, and you see the guests going on City Climb, and you say, that's pretty cool, I want to do that, we can upgrade your ticket.
Wow.
Oh, so you could go just to watch people.
Yeah.
Oh, so the 185 is to watch people do it?
No, 185 is to do the experience.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. How long does it take? I think you told us already.
It's about an hour and a half, roughly. Once you get outside, it's about 45 minutes of time outdoors.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do it.
Yeah.
Actually, let me rephrase that. I know I can't do it.
Oh, and I doubly can't do that. Yeah.
Wow. Is there anything like this anywhere in the world? Where did you get this idea?
So we looked at all sorts of adventure options for the top of 30 Hudson Yards. And, you know, we had everything from kind of the ride-based things that you would find in, like, Las Vegas to other types of things. And what we really decided was the more kind of personal experience is walking up the side of the building. And there's other things that are similar around the world. There's the Sydney Bridge Climb and things like that. But this is really the only one that's in this kind of dense urban environment that gives you the real kind of overview of the whole city.
Kind of King Kong.
Are there people in cars right down below? In other words, if something horrible happened, is there a chance that it could get even worse?
No, nothing like that can happen.
That's great. Okay. Is there an airbag down there?
There's not.
No. Is there a barf bag on there?
Right. Yes. That's what I was thinking.
How much are your people getting paid an hour?
They get paid different rates.
I want the most expensive one.
Yeah. With the healthiest person with the greatest outlook on life.
I want the highest paid.
Right.
The person with the most experience.
I want Mr. Lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely getting paid, you know, more than your normal kind of attractions people.
Great.
And you know, it's and we really are searching out the people that want to really hang off the building all day long for their shifts. And we've got, you know, the really adventuresome, you know, the rock climbers, the people like that that really want to do this and take us out and really be the guides.
It sounds exciting. Yeah. Like, it's not for me, but, you know, the people who are into this, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting.
Wow, it's, well, it's, you know, we're right
I can take in the building's beauty from the downstairs. from the sidewalk. That's a nice, tall building.
I get so freaked out.
Just thinking about it, the hanging over, I'm like, my stomach. Whoa.
Yeah. I just can't even get on a ladder to clean windows on the second floor.
You would have to, like, scrape me off the side of the building and rescue me.
There are some really interesting pictures of people, like, leaning back with their arms up.
Wow.
Like on the edge of the building.
What is wrong with these people?
See, they're harnessed in.
I don't care.
I don't have that much faith in any rope.
In anything, actually. You know? No. Any piece of technology. It could have been that one person came in sick that day and busted something. I had no idea.
Jason's on the phone like, wow, the two biggest pussies I've ever talked to in my life.
That's okay, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
I'll wear that shirt proudly, Mr. Brave Man.
I'll get on a roller coaster, and as it's getting ready to, like, just fire off like a rocket, and it's just kind of making that climb, I'm like, did they check every bolt?
Yes, exactly.
Did they check every... The person who does this, are they paid well?
Yeah.
Only AJ can make Mr. Brave Man sound like an insult.
Mr. Brave Man.
I'll wear that shirt, Mr. Brave Man.
I made it in a loving way.
This is great. Yeah. I mean, you know, for the people who are into it.
Oh, yeah, big time.
That 2-hour safety briefing must make you feel real safe, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you can cover...
You definitely get a sense of all of the safety measures, and by the time you get outside, you're feeling comfortable.
Yeah, I like go-karts. You're on the ground.
Yeah, no, but you know what? This isn't for us, but a lot of people listening
a lot
are going to be into this, and there'll be a deal. I want to
signing up.
Some more videos of this. And
yeah.
So we're linked up on the radio station website. I'd like to talk to you more about it, because there's something about it that fascinates me. Like, I like watching the videos and talking about it.
Yeah. I can see you want to know.
I am curious, but I don't want to do it. But
no.
I am curious to talk to people who do it. You
exactly
know?
Right. I'll be doing it if we go in the building.
Jason Horkin, General Manager, Hudson Yards Experiences, talking about City Climb debuting tomorrow.
Awesome. We're
linked up on the radio station website. Thanks for coming on.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.